We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The ups and downs, highs and lows, overreactions and underreactions, all the narratives and storylines. Nothing quite captures all of that like the NCAA tournament. 60 teams gone, 8 remain, and two of the most fascinating teams, journeys, stories will collide on Tuesday night around 10 o'clock inside Lucas Oil Stadium to punch the final ticket into the Final Four. And it's two brand names, two powers who weren't expected to be here. For Michigan, they were the most doubted one seed in recent memory. Fresh off the news of Isaiah Livers' injury, many picked a round of 32 loss for the Wolverines. Even more had Florida State as the hurdle Michigan would not be able to overcome. But three games in, Michigan is still standing as the favorite in seed and the favorite to few other people. UCLA has had a four-game ride so far with a pair of overtime victories. The Bruins rallied to knock off Michigan State in the first four. Then, after sound wins over BYU and Abilene Christian, Mick Cronin's team did the unthinkable. They overcame a buzzer-beating OT-forcing three to roll in the extra session against Alabama and become the second team ever to vault themselves from the first four into the Elite Eight. And that's what makes Tuesday's clash so tantalizing and this tournament so addicting. It's easy to try to play this thing out on paper, to pick teams labeled in Times New Roman font with your optimistically black or blue pen scribbling in your predictions. By this point, though, red is all over so many brackets, experts included and in quotes. The storylines, the analysis, the predictions, they cannot account for the randomness of this dance. You get a chance at 40 minutes, or in UCLA's case, 45 a couple of times, with the hope of earning another chance. Stack those up, you make a run, and you have a story to tell forever. Seeding does not matter really at any point, especially now, and the storylines aren't all that significant when it comes down to the game. Because if they did, Michigan wouldn't be playing UCLA. Heck, Michigan may not have even played Florida State, and the Bruins probably wouldn't have even gotten a chance against BYU. Yet, here we are, one more 40-minute opportunity for two teams proving doubters wrong every step of the way and on the doorstep of a Final Four. Let's preview the Wolverines and the Bruins. We've got Hunter Dickinson. We've got UCLA play-by-play voice Josh Lewin right here on Defend the Block.
We're talking Michigan basketball. Welcome to Defend the Block, where we'll take you inside the basketball programs with interviews, analysis, and so much more. Now, here's your host, Brian Bush.
Michigan and UCLA, 19th all-time meeting. Oh, what a joy it's going to be on Tuesday night. I get it. 10 o'clock tip-off, not ideal. But two things can be true at once. That's not great. And also, I don't know how in the world you can't stay up for this one. Michigan a chance to reach its third Final Four since 2013 and an opportunity to make it in this incredibly difficult season. Juwan Howard's first crack in the NCAA tournament as a head coach. It will be awesome. Of course, our postseason journey for Michigan basketball has been presented all month long by AbsoPure. AbsoPure is a proud Michigan company since 1908. It's the official bottled water of Michigan athletics. We've been telling you about the delicious bottles of AbsoPure natural spring water. They're available in Meijer, other grocery stores around Michigan, or they can be brought right to you with at-home delivery service. Got to check it out, AbsoPure.com. AbsoPure, the official bottled water of Michigan athletics. Again, as promised, Hunter Dickinson and Josh Lewin coming up momentarily. Also, just a heads up, because of the women's basketball team getting eliminated and the unique journey back home, so thankful that everyone is safe after that emergency landing. We're going to catch up with Kim Barnes-Rico, also hoping to get Naz Hillman at some point. I think we'll probably try to do it next week or the week after as a reflection and as a look ahead for both of those incredible women and also for the program as a whole. So we will put a close on what was a dream season for Michigan women's basketball. Really hope we were getting a chance to see them here on Monday against UConn, but big, big things ahead for Michigan women's basketball. All right, so the Wolverines facing off with UCLA coming up Tuesday night. It's been a magical run for a UCLA team that, as we've talked about a little bit, the Pac-12 has been remarkable. They are 12-2 in this tournament. One of the losses coming against a Pac-12 team with USC over Oregon late on Sunday night. The other one was Colorado falling to Florida State. So this league is playing well. We've said it for a while. The seeding matters little at this point because, let's face it, Michigan wasn't viewed as a one seed by a lot of prognosticators, and certainly UCLA is no longer an 11 seed. This team is legit. They're really good, and we'll talk about them and get a deeper scout with Josh Lewin in a bit. But first, the big man, Hunter Dickinson, another brilliant performance. He buoyed that Michigan points in the paint explosion with 50 of their 76 in the win over Florida State. Always appreciate and learn about basketball with Hunter Dickinson. Let's chat with him now. Great to be joined, as always, by Hunter Dickinson from Indianapolis. And, well, Hunter, I know there were a lot of people raving about the performance of you and this ball club. What impressed you and this team the most when reflecting on this one from Sunday night?
I think, you know, the thing that impressed me and the rest of the team was probably just the way that, you know, we continued playing. Coming in the half, we were up, I think, 11. And, you know, coach came in and said, you know, we're only up one. You know, play it basically like it's 0-0. You got to come out there and play for, you know, 20 more minutes because, you know, this is the NCAA tournament. Anything can really happen out there. And so I think for us, you know, coming out there, I think they cut the lead down to 4. It was like 40-36. And, you know, we could have gave up. They could have continued that run and, you know, even tied it up or took the lead. But we did a really good job of responding. And I think Mike had an and one to get it back up to 7. And I don't think we looked back from there. And I think, you know, we really – put them away and close the game out, which was something that was really, really good for us.
The stat that jumped off the page to me, 50 points in the paint. And when you see that number, you think, oh, well, Hunter must have gone off for 25 or 30. But this team can beat opponents so many different ways on the inside. It seemed like almost every one of your shots were inside the paint. What's it like when you're not the only one who has to be the one banging inside? Anybody, including Mike, can do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, a testament to the team and the depth of the team. I mean, not just me, but B. Johns, Austin Davis, you know, those are two guys who are, you know, really skilled post players. You know, we work on our craft every day with Coach Howard. And so, you know, I think we're really skilled and developed down there. But then you guys got guys like Franz, you know, even Eli and Mike, like you said, are getting in the paint, you know, drawing and ones, you know, hitting floaters, runners in the paint. You know, it's just really good to see us really taking an emphasis on the paint because, you know, those are the easiest shots that you can get really is closest to the rim. And so, you know, I think that's something that Coach Howard really emphasizes is, you know, getting in the paint and, you know, either scoring or dishing it out to your teammates. And so I think we did a really good job with that yesterday.
Been fascinating watching how you have evolved and improved when it comes to handling doubles, shifting defenses, varying looks from opponents. What's gone into that process and grade yourself from maybe that middle portion of the season when you saw that a lot more to now?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely more comfortable with the double teams. I mean, in the middle of the season, you know, kind of took me a little bit off guard when teams started doubling me, but I think, you know, I've faced it pretty much every game we've played. So, since then, so, you know, I'm kind of pretty used to it. You know, I've embraced it. The fact that teams, you know, are giving me the respect of double teaming me. And, you know, I'm just trying to find my teammates and just make plays for them, open the game up for them. And so they can get hot and, you know, we can keep rolling.
Talk to you before about your film sessions with Coach Howard, and I'm sure with plenty of these staff members as well. How much of that is in film and just being able to see what maybe you can't see from your peripheral vision while you're in the flow of the game? How much does that help kind of allow you to digest and maybe have things slow down a little bit?
Yeah, no, I love our one-on-one sessions. I mean, they're so helpful for me because, you know, it just takes it because, you know, when we have film with the team, it's kind of hard. It's more like general at players. And I think when it's me and him, you know, it's just more personal. And I get to ask like more like specific questions, and like we can really break it down and stuff like that. And I can see like what he's thinking and what he wants for me in certain possessions. And so when I get to the game, you know, it's in my mind, like what we were just talking about last night with how to seal this person or in transition, what he wants me to do. And I'll recall it from the night before when we're in the film sessions. And I think that just, you know, really helps me out there on the court.
It's been really fun watching Brandon Johns Jr. and what he's done in the absence of Isaiah Livers. And it feels like his teammates, you and the rest, have been so elated for him and his opportunity. What has it been like experiencing this with him and just seeing how much he's grinded and accepted single-digit minutes for a guy we all know is supremely talented? What's it been like to see all that hard work and patience rewarded?
I mean, like you said, he's extremely talented. You know, we all knew that what B. Johns was capable of. You know, it was a little tough because, you know, he's playing behind another NBA player in Isaiah Livers. And so, you know, it was hard for him to get minutes. But, you know, when Isaiah came out, you know, we all knew that we were going to need B. Johns to step up. And I think he's done that in a big way. We all had the utmost confidence in B. Johns. We've seen it in practice every day. You know, the stuff he's capable of on the court, you know, he's just a freak athlete, but add in his skill and it's just, he's a great player. And I think he's starting to understand how good he really is. Cause I think Coach Howard said this in a practice, you don't even know how good you are. And I think that's really true with B. Johns. I don't really think he knows how really good he is right now. And I think he's just tapping into the potential now. And I think he's tapping into it at a really good time for us.
Yeah. Great timing. Also, The court vision of Johns and Austin Davis, a couple of dimes yesterday. I still think you got the advantage in terms of court vision for bigs, but they're giving you a run for your money yesterday.
Yeah, no, that's something that we were working on, is that high-low pass, because we knew that Florida State was going to read the post, and so that we knew that the other big was going to have to flash, you know, and find them, because those are easy layups, really. And in the game, you could see, you know, it's just – all you got to do is really get the ball to the person at the free throw line, and it was an easy pass for them to make, I think. You know, we did a really good job of executing the game plan that Coach Howard gave us.
Mike Smith, he was probably 6 inches shorter than any other Florida State player, yet his speed jumps off the page. He was able to stay within himself. I thought defensively he really held his own despite those mismatches. How have you seen him evolve and really take over on some of those situations, like that coast-to-coast and one where, I mean, it was a snap of the finger. He was from one end to the other.
Yeah, I think early in the game I even told Mike that, like, this press that they're doing is, you know, it's really, like, fluff. I think if you really want to, just drive it hard one time and just see what happens. And I think, you know, he kept doing that. I think he's really been more confident lately. I think earlier in the season, you know, he was kind of – a little in between on, you know, how he should play. Like, he wants to facilitate, you know, he knows that's his job on the team, is, you know, get the other guys involved. But I think, you know, coming back from Columbia, there's a reason why he averaged so many points. It's because he's a skilled guy and he's good at putting the ball in the hoop. And so I think, you know, he's tried to do a little bit more of that. And I think, you know, that's really helped our team become more diverse and multidimensional. You know, having that kind of scoring from the point guard position, you know, really makes it hard on teams. Especially guarding the ball screen, because I think teams started to focus more on my role, and I think that's opened it up for him and the other players on the floor. And I think, you know, he's just embracing his role now, especially with Isaiah out, of a little more scoring because we need it out there.
So it's now a one full day, 2 day in total turnaround getting set for UCLA on Tuesday. What is this stretch like for you as not just a an athlete, but a student as well. And how do you balance making sure you are scouted up on UCLA, but not trying to overload yourself with too much information in such a tight turnaround?
Yeah, the tournament's very unique in that you get like a week off and then you play, day off, play, and then a week off. It's kind of, you know, unique. I don't know why they do that, I guess for like the TV or stuff like that. But I mean, you know, it's something that, you know, we kind of dealt with during the season with COVID. Like we had I think we had a couple games where it was game, day off, game. And I think that kind of prepared us for this a little bit. But, you know, it is kind of difficult. Usually you have like a couple of days in the regular season to scout for a team. And, you know, usually you know that team because they're in your conference. So, you know, you have an idea of what kind of sets they're running and stuff like that. But, you know, our managers and Jerron, the video guy, they do a great job of having film on multiple teams. So they're always prepared for any opponent that we have. And I think the coaching staff, you know, they're dedicated. They do a great job of film and giving us all the information that we could ever ask for on the opponent. And I think, you know, they come up with really, really good game plans. And I think as long as we follow them, we're usually in a good position to win.
When the start time came out, Michigan fans were planning their Tuesday afternoon nap, 10 o'clock tip-off. Curious, in those late games, are you taking a nap during the day? What's the game plan to make sure things are going? Or are you just so wired that I'm ready to go? It's like a shot of caffeine.
No, I always try to get a nap in regardless of the time. Even only time I don't get a nap in is like for the 12 o'clock games, the noon games. But everything else, I always try to get a nap in. But 10, I have to try to get two naps in for that one.
Last one. I loved the comment that you had in advance of the tournament when you said, every one of those guys in that locker room believe we can win the national championship. It's an easy narrative to say, oh, well, Michigan's won three straight without Isaiah. The confidence is at an all-time high. Has that confidence been there? Is this what you and these guys expected? Is this not much of an ebb and flow?
Yes. I don't think with Isaiah getting out, I mean, obviously, you know, we felt terrible for him. You know, it was obviously didn't make it easier for us. We knew that, you know, it was going to be kind of more difficult because he was out. But, I mean, everybody in that locker room has the utmost confidence in each other. You know, we all believe in each other. And I think, you know, it's apparent on the court of how we play. The way we share the ball, obviously, I think shows that, you know, we trust each other. And I think that really, like, empowers people. I think that really just helps people out there on the court knowing that, you know, your brother really trusts you with the ball in your hands. And so I think starting the tournament, a lot of people had us as, you know, a possible upset in the 8-9 game. But, you know, I think, you know, we've been doubted the whole season from start and even to the finish. And so I think people doubting us is nothing new to us. And I think, you know, we don't really care about it because we, like I said before, we believe in each other, and that's all that matters, really.
Been a blast watching you and your team compete. I'm hoping for three more. I'm hoping for more receipts on some of those upset picks. Hunter, really appreciate the time. Go get them against UCLA.
Thank you.
Great to be joined by the play-by-play voice of UCLA basketball. That's Josh Lewin. Josh, I think a lot of people didn't expect you to still be in Indianapolis at this point. How's the trip been?
Oh, it's been amazing. You know, everybody expected you guys, and that's great, but nobody expected the Bruins, so it's been fun. You know, they've already outlasted one of the great Michigan teams with the Spartans, and, you know, with the Wolverines dead ahead, this is going to be the tough one, but we're really happy to be here.
Take me back to the game on Sunday night. How did this UCLA team bounce back and look like they were the one that tied it in regulation with the three?
Yeah, they've been in so many of those games this year, Brian. And, you know, first of all, to not foul defending that three, you know, they would have played that one back over their entire following months. Mick Cronin and the coaching staff sure would have. So it worked out okay. But pretty remarkable, like you hinted at, to have scored 25 points in the second half and then nearly matched that in a five-minute overtime. You know, they were on pace to score 92 points in a half, basically, right? You know, 23 points in 5 minutes. So losing four right at the end of the season, each of them in just ridiculously heartbreaking fashion, one right after the other, it was just boom, 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 boom. I think, kind of stiffened their resolve a little bit. It's like, all right, you know, we've been in these games. We've had our heart broken before. That's enough. You know, so starting with the Michigan State game in the first four round where, again, it was a coin flip. It could have gone either way. I think it just seemed familiar to the guys. Like, all right, we've definitely been here before, and it's been in the last week or two most often. So let's learn from that, and let's get this done this time.
You alluded to that four-game losing streak. It looks better now considering what's happened for the Pac-12 because it's against four teams that got into the NCAA tournament. The Pac-12's only lost twice, and one was Pac-12 on Pac-12. So is it as simple as just they got over the hump against Michigan State, or have there been some other things? I know turnover numbers are down. Obviously, some individuals have gone off. What's flipped to turn the tide and allow them to go on a four-game win streak?
Yeah, it's funny because they're doing it without their best player, Chris Smith. He was lost on New Year's Eve to an ACL tear. Jalen Hill, who's a rim protector that really would have been useful against you guys. You know, we haven't seen him since Groundhog's Day. He just kind of packed up and went home. So the guys that are here are completely, completely bought in terms of defense wins championships. And Mick Cronin's talked about, you know, you can say you're playing defense, but are you doing it at an NIT level or are you doing it at a championship March Madness level? And he was saying that in November. So I think the guys that are here, and you see it with how they go after it defensively, you know, they want to come at you like piranhas where, you know, they're not super big necessarily, but they're in great position and that they do the necessary things. And I think the difference now is they're doing it for 40 minutes and not 30 or 35. And you know, you're going to have to do that against teams like Michigan.
Johnny Juzang, one of the stars of this tournament, he's averaging 20 in the first four games for the Bruins. Why is he such a special player, and what has he meant to this team and during this run?
Well, you know, it's funny. He's come home. He's from L.A., grew up not too far from Westwood. And all of his big games have not been in Westwood. You know, he's actually averaging about 8 or 9 points a game at home, and it's almost triple that on the road, which nobody's been able to figure out. So, yeah, he's making big shots. They certainly did that early in the game against, I've already forgotten who we just beat, Alabama. This is how foggy my mind is in March Madness. But, yeah, you know, I mean, great attitude and wasn't necessarily getting the playing time that he thought he might get at Kentucky. So he kind of shrugged and said, I'm coming home. And especially during the pandemic, that ended up being the right thing to do for him and certainly for the team.
And Jaime Jaquez, he's another one who's been fun to watch, putting up 17-7. How, I mean, you've seen a little bit of Michigan. Obviously, you've seen all of UCLA. How do you think he inside can match up? And I mean, he certainly held his own against Alabama.
Well, it's funny. You know, I keep watching the pregame shows on TNT, and Charles Barkley is kind of fastened in on Jaquez, as he calls him his favorite player in the tournament. And I can see why, because, you know, it's another 6'6 guy that just goes after it and makes sure he doesn't lose a rebound battle. And that's what you get with Jaquez. He's a tough guy, and you know, I wish he had 3 more inches of height. You know, I mean, he'd be unstoppable. But hit some major shots against Alabama down the stretch, and he's kind of on a mission right now.
Tiger Campbell, a young man who distributes it really well, 2-year starter. I mean, you got to be pretty good if you're starting every game as a freshman like he did last season. How does he have such great court vision, and how does he help Jaquez, Juzang, and the others get their shots?
Yeah, it's a great point. And it's funny because, you know, he hasn't had big assist games lately. It's been just this flurry of fours and fives for assists for basically 2 months. I mean, he's had one game of even 7 assists over his last, I think it's 20 games now, you know, but he's averaging close to 5.5 assists per game. And, you know, a lot of that was top heavy early. He was having 10s and 12s. But now it's a steady stream of fives. And I think more than that, it's kind of what you alluded to, is he doesn't hurt himself. You know, he's turned it over twice in this tournament in 4 games, 2 of which have gone overtime, and the ball is always in his hands. So you go back to Mick Cronin at Cincinnati, you know, and he had guys like that in the backcourt too that were just very careful with the ball. And slowly but surely, it's becoming a Cincinnati Bearcats team out west. You know, that's what Mick Cronin kind of promised everybody, and it's taken a full 2 years to get there, but here we are.
And I have to imagine that he's somebody who's the focal point and why this team's only turned it over 28 times in four games, averaging about 10, 11 a game during the regular season. Where have you seen this team kind of take care of the basketball better? Does it start with him? Is it a whole team thing? Where's that coming from?
Yeah, it is kind of a team thing. And, you know, against Abilene Christian, which was the team that was supposed to turn you over, heck, they turned Texas over 23 times, they only had two turnovers at halftime, and both times it's because somebody stepped on the sideline inadvertently. I actually never seen that before. They just literally ended up with a, you know, a size 12 on the sideline, where if you have a size 11, it doesn't count. So they've been very careful, and that certainly is part of it. The only guy who turns it over, and he turns it over all the time, is the big. That's Cody Riley. I mean, I'd have to look this up, but I'm going to tell you that probably a third of the turnovers in this tournament by the Bruins have been one guy, and it's not your backcourt. It's just a guy with some bad hands in the low post. So, yeah, I think top to bottom, it's just a point of emphasis, and it's just like football, right? If you win that turnover margin battle, you're probably on top.
A few more with Josh Lewin, play-by-play voice of UCLA basketball. Pac-12, they've been the star of the show. Only two losses, as I alluded to earlier. Did you ever see anything like this coming when you saw the initial bracket or as you were watching UCLA through this season?
Well, you know, Mick Cronin's made a good point throughout here that, you know, with COVID being taken so seriously out west, there was no practice time. I mean, guys basically just shook hands, took the court, you know, on opening night. And it made the conference get out of the gate pretty slowly. I mean, every one of those battles against a major five conference, they were losing because, let's face it, they, you know, turns out in hindsight, yeah, of course they did. They were going up against teams that had been practicing for a couple months. So now that everybody's up to speed, you know, Bill Walton's a happy man. You know, everybody can see that this is a very talented conference. I think Mick knew that the whole time. And what's stunning to think about, I mean, as Oregon State became the darling from the other side of the bracket, you know, the dirty little secret is, because they were picked 12th in the conference, dead last, and they were down 32-16 against the Bruins in the first round of the Pac-12 tournament, stormed back. The Bruins, with a couple seconds left, were at the free throw line, could have won that game, and Jules Bernard made only one out of two. If he makes two out of two, we never hear of Oregon State. They're not, you know, they're nowhere close to the tournament. And when you think about what that means for the conference, you know, it's basically, you know, $1 million a win, a couple million dollars a win for the conference with every winning ticket that you punch going forward. That could end up being like a $10 million missed free throw by Jules Bernard for the conference, which is just stunning. So it's a fun thing to talk about all these teams still playing.
Yeah, it's a good thing for Oregon State, and it worked out for UCLA as well. You know, people talk about, oh, well, this is big for this conference because they keep going. And, of course, the money is certainly there. We've seen kind of in waves this league have solid performances. Bobby Hurley's recruiting well at Arizona State. We saw Mike Hopkins in Washington have a great season a few years back. Can this be something that the Pac-12 turns into a real, hey, we're here to stay, this is a chance for us to be at that 5-6-7 bid league again?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't get a better recruiting video made than what's happened here in Indianapolis. Yeah. for UCLA. You know, I mean, to get all the guys on the CBS and TNT set talking about the tradition and the history of the program, talking about what Mick Cronin is building, everybody falling in love with Juzang and Jaquez. And, you know, now I can see where it's kind of sexy if you're, you know, a high school junior or senior thinking, man, that, you know, and you get to live where there's palm trees and a beach. You know, I mean, where do I sign up for that? So it's not only building a fence around all the great talent in L.A., which has been a problem in the past, but, you know, they've got this recruiting poster just stapled now out there with what's happened in this tournament.
Last one for Michigan fans as they watch this ball game coming up on Tuesday night. What needs to happen for UCLA to really click? What are the things early in that game that if you see as a Bruins fan, supporter, coach, you're thinking, yeah, we've got a chance like we did in the first four?
Well, you've hit on a couple of them. They still have to not turn the ball over. And look, let's face it. I mean, they're going to get 50 points in the paint scored against them. I mean, I really think that's going to happen. They do not have the size. They got the toughness to match up with Michigan, but they just don't have the size. So, I mean, anytime you guys go in, you're going to get what you want pretty much. I think the key for the Bruins is going to simply not have one of those nights where they're clanging three-point shots, you know, 5 of 24 or something like that. And my fear is that having not seen or practiced in Lucas Oil Stadium yet, the sight lines there are so different. They're just so different. And, you know, they'll have one day of shoot around to kind of get used to it. But, you know, I just hope the moment isn't too big. I maybe that's overstating it. I mean, they've already done some big things in terms of, you know, when the white hot lights are on them, they've done okay. But it's going to be a different feel to it, you know, playing at a dome. And they haven't done that one before. There's not a single senior on this team, you know, which is remarkable. It's pretty much a squadron of sophomores that are getting this done here. So if they do shoot it okay, I think they're going to be fine. And I think we're in for another great battle like they just had against Alabama. But if you guys can come out and defend that three-point arc and get the Bruins thinking about that, and they start out something like 2 of 12 from distance, it could be a long night.
Josh Lewin, play-by-play voice for UCLA. Really appreciate the time on the quick turnaround, and have a good broadcast on Tuesday night.
You too, Bri. See you there. Take care.
Thanks again to Josh and to Hunter Dickinson for their willingness to join us on the quick turnaround. Rest up, Michigan fans, because come 10 o'clock or 9:57 on Tuesday night, the final spot in the Final Four will be determined. The Wolverines and the Bruins played two fascinating games back a few years ago with Lonzo Ball and the Bruins winning in LA over Michigan in 2016. And then the next December, 2017, that national championship game season for the Wolverines. Remember, Michigan was down big at Chrysler Center, facing off with UCLA, overcoming a 15-point deficit to win in overtime by 9. That was a good one. Here's hoping for a similar result to that one. That'll do it for me, Brian Bush. Thanks to Tom Wyrod for his assistance in getting all of these interviews set up. And thanks to you for tuning in. Subscribe, rate, review, spread the word. Michigan basketball in the Elite Eight. Thank you so much for listening once again, and go Blue.
Thanks for listening to today's edition of Defend the Block, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network, MGo Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.